En otras noticias, las duras sentencias aplicadas al poeta palestino Ashraf Farhat y otros críticos del gobierno de Arabia Saudita han generado preocupación en organismos internacionales que velan por la libertad de expresión. Giselle Duncan-Tensiler reporta.
El relator especial de la ONU sobre el derecho a la libertad de expresión manifestó este miércoles gran alarma por la creciente represión de esta garantía en Arabia Saudita y urgió al gobierno de ese país a respetar el ejercicio de ese derecho básico. En un comunicado, David Kay se refirió a los casos del poeta Ashraf Fayyad y de dos activistas de derechos humanos y blogueros que han recibido castigos muy duros por exponer sus opiniones. El experto afirmó que ningún país debe limitar la libertad de expresión, sobre todo cuando se trata de personas que abogan por la tolerancia, el respeto y los derechos humanos. Kay recordó que el poeta Fayyad, palestino nacido en Arabia Saudita, fue sentenciado a muerte por apostasía, una acusación basada en su obra y en supuestos comentarios blasfemos. A su juicio, esos ataques a la libertad de expresión desalientan el pensamiento crítico, la participación pública y el compromiso social, tres elementos esenciales para el desarrollo humano y la cultura democrática. Giselle Duncan-Tensiler, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
En Brasil, a propósito de demostrar el apoyo social hacia el gobierno y avanzar las reformas sociales, se ha iniciado la tercera Conferencia Nacional de Juventudes. En su discurso en ese evento, la presidenta Dilma Rousseff abogó por el respeto a la independencia de los poderes y por la inclusión social. Escuchemos.
Nosotros vamos a tener un Brasil justo, un Brasil desarrollado, pero eso no se va a lograr si nosotros no tenemos y no incluimos a la juventud. Nosotros vamos a tener que considerar a la juventud de este país, ya que la juventud de este país es lo que Brasil tiene de más valor, porque tiene su presente y su futuro. Esa es la razón por la que para nosotros, los miembros del gobierno, es un momento especial participar en estas conferencias.
Un tribunal ha declarado juicio nulo en el caso de Freddie Gray, un joven afroamericano de 25 años asesinado por un policía en la ciudad de Baltimore. El acusado William Potter, uno de los seis agentes investigados en conexión con la muerte del joven, ha sido absuelto porque el jurado no pudo llegar a un acuerdo sobre los cuatro cargos que le imputaban. Freddie Gray falleció en abril después de sufrir una lesión en el cuello mientras estaba bajo custodia policial.
A través de todos estos años, con sucias promesas de alcanzar perdaños, se llevaron nuestras riquezas naturales y nos dejaron corrupción, más fuga de capitales, tales males mentales, no sabes cuánto vale, situaciones desiguales, conceptos individuales.
En más noticias de Estados Unidos, algunos precandidatos republicanos parecen haber modificado su posición sobre los intentos de derrocar al presidente sirio Bashar al-Assad. Durante su debate en Las Vegas, Nevada, Donald Trump y Ted Cruz dijeron estar opuestos a la remoción del primer mandatario en Damasco, ya que ello dejaría a Siria en manos del Estado Islámico y otros grupos extremistas. Además, ambos políticos argumentaron que para Washington sería más conveniente que Assad permaneciera en el poder.
Dicen que el mundo ya no va a cambiar, que no insistamos. Resignación nos pide la...
Por otro lado, el diario El Washington Times reporta que el gobierno de Barack Obama ha logrado identificar las coordenadas precisas de centros de propaganda de Daesh, el llamado Estado Islámico, en Siria, en Irak y en el Líbano. No obstante, Estados Unidos se demora en atacar esos importantes objetivos, manteniendo discusiones acerca de si es conveniente hacerlo. De acuerdo al Times, esos centros de propaganda se ubican en barrios residenciales y la Casa Blanca no quiere atacarlos porque se preocupa, supuestamente, por las potenciales víctimas civiles. Otros medios alternativos como GlobalResearch.ca de Canadá no tienen ningún empacho en publicar detalles sobre la forma en que Washington más bien parece estar empeñado en perpetuar la existencia de Daesh. En Grecia, años de crisis financiera, deudas e injustos pactos con acreedores internacionales han hecho que el país enfrente ahora una crisis humanitaria que parece cada vez más inevitable, especialmente cuando la llamada Troika Europea sigue presionando para que el pueblo heleno pueda cumplir con la reducción de su déficit público.
Pese a que el derecho internacional estipula que los ciudadanos deben gozar de niveles mínimos de bienestar social, económico y cultural, el gobierno de Grecia se ha visto incapacitado de garantizar tales derechos y los ha dejado a un lado debido a una serie de medidas impopulares exigidas por la presión de los acreedores internacionales. En este sentido, lo que comenzó como una crisis financiera se ha convertido, a juicio de expertos en derechos humanos, en una crisis humanitaria. Y es que el alto nivel de deuda helena ha sido la excusa perfecta de la Troika para presionar cada vez más a Grecia, algo que viene haciendo desde hace 5 años. Con mucha reticencia, el gobierno izquierdista de Alexis Tsipras también ha accedido a la asfixia de los acreedores y se ha visto obligado a impulsar nuevos recortes y duras reformas para reducir el gasto público, reanimar la economía y finalmente pagar la deuda. Sin embargo, esta fórmula de la Troika históricamente se ha traducido en un círculo vicioso que en el largo plazo no se convierte en crecimiento económico con sentido social. En su lugar, solo ha dejado un estado de bienestar golpeado. En el caso de Grecia, una crisis que ha desatado aumentos de impuestos, desempleo y la caída en picada de los ingresos promedio de las familias.
En Guatemala, activistas y defensores de los derechos humanos reportan medidas gubernamentales con fines de criminalizar el activismo político. Carolina Rivas tiene más detalles.
Guatemala recientemente celebró el Día Internacional de los Derechos Humanos, pero en nuestro país hay poco que celebrar cuando se registran hasta la fecha 455 ataques en contra de aquellas personas que se dedican a defender derechos humanos. Hoy, más de 50 organizaciones, entre ellas la Federación Guatemalteca de Escuelas Radiofónicas CEGER, se han unido para denunciar una estrategia de intimidación y criminalización en su contra. Los ataques se centran actualmente en Rafael Maldonado y Norma Cruz. Maldonado es un abogado del Centro de Acción Legal Ambiental y Social Calas, organización que lidera las denuncias en contra de Repsa, empresa responsable del ecocidio en el río La Pasión. Yuri Melini, representante de Calas, informa que Rafael Maldonado ha denunciado en más de 11 ocasiones ataques en su contra.
Se refiere concretamente en el caso del río La Pasión a la compañía Repsa, en el caso de las licencias mineras, las tres empresas mineras, en este caso compañía guatemalteca de níquel, la Maya Níquel Sociedad Anónima y Minera San Rafael. Y por supuesto también el caso de la Cámara de Industria y el CACIF, que sobre este tema también ha emitido pronunciamientos que de alguna manera distorsionan y ponen en riesgo la integridad y la seguridad del licenciado Maldonado.
¿Qué ha significado, entre otras cosas, amenazas, ataques directos, por supuesto el tema de 2 allanamientos a su casa, mensajes por vía digital y demás? Todas están debidamente documentadas, todas obran en la Fiscalía de Sección de Derechos Humanos, en la Unidad de Protección a Defensores y Activistas de Derechos Humanos.
Norma Cruz es representante de la Fundación Sobrevivientes, organización que lleva la denuncia en contra de Roberto Barreda, hijo de la expresidenta de la Corte Suprema de Justicia, Ofelia de León, por el caso Sicavisa. Norma Cruz denuncia actualmente que existe un plan de desestabilización en contra de ella y de su organización.
Se presentó información a la fiscal general directamente sobre información que se nos había hecho llegar a través de un reo que guarda prisión en el sector, en la zona 18, en donde se plantea todo un plan, digamos, de desestabilización hacia mi persona y hacia la Fundación Sobrevivientes, en aras, digamos, de que algunos casos no avancen. ¿Qué denuncias hay ahorita de esa fecha a la actualidad? Toda una campaña negra hacia mi persona, con aras, digamos, de que abandonemos el caso de Roberto Barrera. Aparte de eso, están todas las acciones, ayer mismo se nos notificaba, ya se ampararon para insistir en sacarnos de este proceso.
En este contexto, diversas organizaciones han solicitado medidas de protección para las y los defensores de derechos humanos. Rafael Maldonado, sin embargo, no cuenta con ninguna medida debido a que las autoridades no se las han otorgado. Escuchemos a Yuri Melini.
Que el Estado de Guatemala le otorgue medidas de protección al licenciado Maldonado, ya ha habido una total denegatoria por parte de la ministra Eunice Mendizábal a tramitar el expediente y a atender las medidas precautorias, pese a que han habido exhortativas de parte del Grupo Filtro de la Unión Europea y las directrices internacionales en este sentido. Y a la fecha, más de 40 días después de haber iniciado el expediente, hay una total inacción por parte tanto de la Policía Nacional Civil como del Ministerio de Gobernación para atender esta demanda inmediata de protección.
En España, cientos de bomberos han protestado en la ciudad de Bilbao contra el proyecto de ley del gobierno vasco que regulará su actividad. Los activistas han marchado con sus cascos e indumentaria frente a los edificios gubernamentales. Según los organizadores, la ley abre la puerta a la privatización del servicio y no lo preserva como un derecho público. Según ellos, suponen además la precarización del sistema porque, afirman, permite contratar personal nuevo a tiempo parcial o voluntarios. En Ecuador, el proyecto de generación de energía eléctrica Coca-Codo Sinclair ha iniciado su primera fase de pruebas hidráulicas. Esta central hidroeléctrica es una de las 8 instalaciones y la de mayor tamaño, que suministrará el 90% de la energía del país, que incluso podrá exportar parte de sus recursos a sus vecinos. Simón Sendrov reporta.
De importador a exportador en tan solo una década, ¿es posible? El Ecuador asegura que sí, al menos en el ámbito de la producción de la energía.
Teníamos un país que no tenía ni siquiera la capacidad de autoabastecerse desde el punto de vista energético con los recursos que tenía, sino que tenía que importar mucha electricidad en el 2007, que significaban además miles de millones de recursos que se iban del país para comprar electricidad.
Y para ello el país está construyendo 8 estaciones hidroeléctricas que en total representarán en el futuro el 90% de toda la energía de la nación. Entre estos proyectos hay uno que se destaca por sus características especiales, Coca-Codo Sinclair.
El Ecuador ha apostado por una energía renovable. Esta obra que están viendo detrás de mi espalda es la más grande que tiene el país. Se trata de una estación hidroeléctrica que cuando esté terminada suministrará el 40% de la necesidad de luz de todo el país.
El proyecto de Coca-Codo Sinclair tiene peculiaridades que supusieron un reto para los ingenieros, y es que debido a las condiciones geográficas no puede levantarse como otras estaciones hidroeléctricas. Básicamente su funcionamiento se divide en 3 etapas. En primer lugar, la separación de las aguas del río, de las que una parte se dirige a la presa y la otra sigue su rumbo habitual para minimizar el daño ambiental. Después, el agua acumulada se dirige por un túnel de 25 kilómetros manteniendo la misma altura para finalmente caer desde una altitud de 600 metros. De esta forma gana la velocidad y fuerza necesarias para hacer funcionar a los generadores. Este túnel que atraviesa las montañas supuso una de las mayores dificultades.
Problemas geológicos que se detectaron cuando se abre una estructura, y eso ocurrió cuando se hizo la apertura para este túnel. Entonces, los materiales que se encontraron no estaban figurados en el estudio inicial. Entonces, se entramparon las dos perforadoras, las dos tuneladoras, y hubo que hacer una serie de trabajos adicionales para liberarlas.
Este proyecto ha atravesado además otros momentos difíciles. En diciembre del 2014, 13 trabajadores murieron tras el colapso de la sección de captación de la estación. 10 eran ecuatorianos y 3 chinos. Precisamente es una empresa asiática la que tiene la mayor parte de la inversión en el proyecto, cuyo costo ya superó los 2.000 millones de dólares. Pero China no es el único país con el que Ecuador colabora para la construcción de las estaciones hidroeléctricas, entre otros proyectos a gran escala.
Ya tenemos una presencia importante en proyectos trascendentes para los ecuatorianos, con tecnología rusa, con financiamiento ruso. Pudimos empezar proyectos muy importantes como el de generación de electricidad en Bajo Alto o la hidroeléctrica Toachi-Pilatón, que tiene la cooperación técnica de Rusia.
Todo con el fin de autoabastecerse, pero también de compartir. Se ha creado una red que incluye a los países vecinos. La energía se dirigiría a Chile y Perú, pero también al norte, a Colombia y viceversa. Para ello se construyen subestaciones de diferentes capacidades, como esta.
Esta subestación es una de las 4 subestaciones de 500.000 voltios que estamos construyendo aquí como parte del proyecto. Es importante, es bastante importante para nosotros, para el sistema eléctrico ecuatoriano, porque nos va a permitir aprovechar toda la producción del proyecto Coca-Cola Sinclair.
Si se cumple el sueño y las ambiciones, el Ecuador se convertirá en un importante productor de energía eléctrica limpia y renovable, que tendrá un bajo impacto sobre el medio ambiente, condición que se ha convertido en imprescindible en el siglo XXI. Simeón Sendrov, RT, Ecuador.
En Colombia, el nuevo acuerdo sobre la justicia de las víctimas de la guerra civil es descrito por autoridades de Naciones Unidas como muy significativo, ya que representa el paso más importante para alcanzar la paz tras 60 años de conflicto. Rocío Franco amplía la información.
Era el punto más difícil de consenso, porque tras 60 años de conflicto y casi 8 millones de víctimas, las partes debían acordar cómo hacer justicia por los crímenes cometidos. Finalmente, el gobierno y las Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, las FARC, vencieron esta semana uno de los mayores obstáculos de las negociaciones de paz. Pactaron que la justicia a las víctimas se hará a través de un sistema integral que contempla la reparación, la verdad, la justicia y la no repetición. En una entrevista, el coordinador residente y humanitario de la ONU en ese país, Fabricio Hochschild, destacó que se trata de un modelo ejemplar a nivel internacional. Rocío Franco, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Toshi y de Norma Martínez, se despide de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez, Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras, wordpress.com.
Se va a cumplir con los deseos del pueblo egipcio, porque este parlamento tiene un muy buen número de jóvenes.
Por ejemplo, que defenderán derechos y el futuro.
También tienen un número importante de mujeres que han logrado llegar a este alto puesto y que representan amplios sectores de la sociedad.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, or freakradio.org on your computer. Or perhaps you're listening to a replay of this on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, where we archive these shows. That's huffsantacruz.org. I'm Robert Norris. Stay tuned for the December 17th, 2015 edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me laugh. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation in single patience. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Thank you. satirical, putting the mere into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial, tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial, what's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance, there's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And hello again from Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert, and you can reach this program kind of by calling 423-4833. Not live, unfortunately, although it's looking brighter, maybe, that we may be getting a studio. At least there are some prospects. But again, if you want to earn $500 and find us a studio space or suggest one, you may be in luck, and so may we. Again, give me a call at 423-4833. Mention if you see a place that's at least a 10x10 space, indoors or outdoors, we can construct something. Access to electricity and internet, hopefully bathroom. And, hey, then we could actually start recovering some of the broadcasters who have drifted away and hope that there will actually be a station this time next year, or at least programs you'll be able to hear of this kind next time next year. I do shows, for those who just tuned in, that concern themselves with local issues, particularly around homeless folks or unhoused folks, as some people describe themselves. I'm going to be looking at Freedom Sleep 23, which I didn't even know would happen necessarily. That's the continuing protest in front of City Hall on the sidewalk that actually has set up a kind of de facto safe zone where people can sleep without being ticketed by under the sleeping ban by police or rangers. The sleeping ban is a code section in the municipal code that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 anywhere on any public property whatsoever in Santa Cruz, and also even in your own private vehicle parked on public property and on much private space as well. There are some exceptions for those lucky enough to make deals with churches, and there are probably less than a dozen vehicles that have such vehicles out of 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in the shelter space for less than really emergency shelter, only for 100. And in the so-called transitional programs, maybe a couple hundred more. But you've got hundreds and hundreds of people outside who are facing $158 citations, or more important, just the need to hide, sleep unsafely, not sleep in a community group where they can help each other, not sleep in well-lighted areas where they might be better protected, not too well-lighted. We didn't like the massive lighting that was being used to shine lights on us in the middle of the night for those of us who are protesting along with the freedom sleepers. The real freedom sleepers are the homeless people who sleep there. And indeed, it looks like almost all the sleepers last Tuesday on the 15th were unhoused folks. Toby came over from San Jose. He's a free-streaming activist who makes it a point to travel where there are abuses and let other communities see vividly, visually, and hear what police officers are doing when they drag away people like Michael Knox in the middle of the night out into the rain because he's sleeping in the forbidden zone, that is to say, along the unused, vacant corridor under a kind of a lean-to area, you know, the area that's covered as you go to the city council offices. And we're going to be hearing from him today. He's actually had some good fortune. Police, after weeks, finally returned his survival gear, finally returned his artwork, and finally returned at least some of the money that he was afraid had been stolen by the police. And we're going to be listening to that shortly. In fact, I think we're going to get into that pretty directly. Other things that are coming up, we're going to have an interview with Keith McHenry, a co-founder of Food Not Bombs and local Expand the Performance Space activist, who is accused of vandalism and talking mean to the city council staff, Scott Collins, assistant to the assistant city manager, whom he called a fucking pussy. And as a consequence of that, he is now accused with disturbing the peace or using fighting words. Those who know Keith know that while he's a very outspoken guy, he is not a violent guy, at least not in the 27 years I've known him. I've never seen him be violent to anyone. And I've heard tell of a lot of violence against him, but not his engaging in it himself. He went to court, and we're going to hear his discussion of that and a couple of other things. He and Abby Samuels are kind of withdrawing from the Freedom Sleepers movement, are taking a distance from it. Hutna Bombs itself is apparently in trouble. They need volunteers, so if you want to help Santa Cruz Hutna Bombs continue its important work on Saturdays and Sundays of providing food, which the Homeless Lack of Services Center has now refused to do, moving its budget to programs where they can entice federal funding for pseudo-housing pathways. I call it pseudo because not much new housing is being built. It is part of the endless fantasy that the government puts out to the community that they're actually engaged in meaningful moves to, quote, end homelessness, which is just nonsense. But it's a great PR thing that's used, because otherwise people would be wondering, why are you spending billions, if not more than a trillion, on foreign wars and bankster bailouts, but doing nothing to deal with problems here at home that not only affect the homeless folks on the street, but also cause NIMBYs, not in my backyard folks, to become paranoid and business to become frantic and attempt, and it results in the destruction of civil liberties at home, which I've been fulminating against for years. But let's hear something from Freedom Sleeper Land. I didn't spend much time down there myself on Tuesday night. I've kind of withdrawn into my warm cocoon here to some extent, though I do maintain contact. I'm kind of serving as a broadcast nexus, what little I can do there. There's going to be an event called Project Pollinate this Saturday at the Loudon Nelson Center, starting at 11 o'clock, running till, I think it's maybe 4, maybe 6, where everybody's going to be setting up their little liberal tables. Huff will be doing the same. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for those who don't know. And there's also some people supporting the next Freedom Sleepout, which is coming up on the 22nd of December, where it is quite possible there'll be rain. There are two different predictions for rain. One is rain, prediction that tomorrow, Friday through next Tuesday, there'll be light rain at different points. And another predicts that there'll be no rain Sunday and Monday, but rain from next Tuesday the 22nd through Friday the 25th. Rain for Christmas. So, some folks who believe there needs to be a tarp, there needs to be a tent, there needs to be something there to shield people who are freedom sleepers and homeless folks. Well, freedom sleepers are homeless folks at this point, almost entirely, with a few exceptions. And that will be an issue that they'll be raising at the Project Pollinate, try to get people to donate tarps, blankets, maybe assistance in creating some kind of makeshift structure, or to come down and video if the police attempt to remove it in the rain, which they might likely do. Police here are not unlike the robotic minions of other cities. So they apparently gave some nice hand warmers to Amethyst, one of the Freedom Sleepers, last Tuesday in the Freedom Sleep 23, but only for herself and one other person, not for the rest of the folks there. That was Officer Jones, and she puts out a special shout-out thank you to Officer Jones. But, you know, buying a few treats for a few people, maybe a nice gesture, but then later in the, you know, are you going to take their survival gear and arrest them if they're trying to shelter themselves against cruelty, the elements, sickness? And indeed, there'll be a homeless memorial coming up on the 22nd, same day as the sleepout. That's according to Homeless Lack of Services Center Director Phil Kramer, who I spoke with on Sunday at the forum that we're going to be hearing more about, hearing some actual tape, or I guess now it's audio, from where Keith McHenry, Robert Aguirre of the San Jose Jungle, a the name of the largest homeless encampment in San Jose, destroyed by the San Jose authorities a year ago, as well as Tristia Bauman, attorney for the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, gave some excellent jabber, as I put it, and I use the phrase with some cynicism, and some criticism, although it's always interesting to hear what the experience of people are, what their hopes are, but I'm always interested in, well, at least recently, I've been interested more in seeing organizing happen. Although I'm doing not too much of it myself. I'm putting out a lot of information myself, or what I think is news, and also some voices of folks who I think don't get out so much. There was also a TV show that followed the Sunday Forum, the Freedom Sleepers Forum, which I was on with my teddy bear and my bathrobe. You know, I wear those things in order to dramatize, satirize, and, you know, kind of theatricize the fact that homeless people are outside at night with no legal place to sleep. And, yeah. So I'll be playing some stuff from that, I think, on Sunday when I do a longer show. My apologies to those of you who listened last Sunday, and the show got chopped up in the middle, and I played a long, which seemed to me later relatively boring and dense section about the Bell versus Boise case, which is the Department of Justice filed a statement of interest in that case, but more important, or, well, that's the thing which most people consider important, but the actual attorneys arguing before the Court of Appeals that homeless folks in Boise, or houseless folks in Boise, have a right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, have a right to restitution for the abuses they've suffered by police, stealing their sleep, stealing their property, stealing their health. And it was an interesting but somewhat arcane discussion, which I didn't actually finish, but people can go to it online if they want. If you look for Bell versus Boise, you can find the audio presentations by both the hacks in the city defending the abuses of the city of Boise, as well as the hacks defending the homeless. And I say hacks because lawyers, the differential between the amount of money lawyers make and the amount of money ordinary folks make, and the actual services they provide, it's just some sort of arcane maneuvering through a legal structure that is profoundly biased against poor people, doesn't impress me much. And I'm very impatient with attorneys, and I know other people aren't, and really feel that it's a good avenue, and it's the only avenue, because protest in extremely conservative and dark times often it gets dismissed, doesn't happen, gets snuffed out, leads to penalties without progress for those who do it. But I guess it's a variety of avenues that has to be tried. We can fall back on that nostrum, that little cliche. Not just a cliche, but it seems to offer not a lot of hope. And, you know, it's Christmas season. I should be, you know, giving you some sparkly, jingly hope. Perhaps a little song by Carol Denny that I played recently, which it might be a good... you might find this hopeful, but then again, you might not. Depends on your, I don't know, whether you like satire as a form of hope.
This town puts up decorations right around holiday time, then hands on lots of citations for people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the side. You cannot lean on the wall. You cannot stand in the doorway. You cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of four. Maybe the people
ocean away. People don't mean to be heartless, but they don't know what to do. People don't mean to be homeless. And Dutch father to you, this girl gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would thank you and something. How people don't care anymore. And this town's got the answer. Maybe they'll all go away. We just make it illegal to have no place you can stay. If we just make it illegal to be disabled and poor, maybe we finally won't have to think about them anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would thank you with something. How people don't care anymore. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would thank you with something.
So we're talking with
Michael Knox.
And Michael, I know that in the past you've given us some pretty wretched tales of, well, you were the man who was dragged away. Actually, it wasn't just a story. I saw it actually happen. You were taken by police from your sleeping posture under blankets, very close to where we're sitting now in front of City Hall, under the eaves of the City Council offices, taken out into the rain, arrested, and then you found your money and your drawing, and all your survival gear were supposedly, you feared they were stolen, possibly by the police. Mm-hmm. And then you repeatedly went back and were kind of given what seemed like the runaround at the police department.
Yes.
But eventually you were told to come back, not even on the Tuesdays and Thursdays when they're supposed to be open from 12:30 to 2:30, but on the next day, I think. And they opened it up especially for you?
Yes. On Tuesday, I...
Hold it. So go ahead.
Yeah, I went on the Tuesday like you're supposed to. Waited for about 3 hours because nobody knew where my property was or what had become of it. No claims, no numbers.
You weren't given a receipt of any kind?
No, I wasn't. Which is why I worried they had just threw it away and were stalling for time with the runaround. I was relieved to get it back the next day, but...
When did you get it back?
The very next day. They said they had some property that was improperly tagged, but they didn't know if it was mine or not, and I could identify it Wednesday morning.
You were able to make off with three other people's property as well, perhaps?
Oh, no. It was my property. I just don't know why it took so long to get it back. 3 weeks without my bedding.
And they also gave you a $50 reward of some kind?
Oh, no, but they did give me my cash back, or at least enough of it to make me happy.
So how did that happen? How did that come about? As you say, you had $50 you had 50 bucks in sort of inside one of your coats, and that was not... Then when it somehow disappeared along with the coat, and when you got to the jail, you didn't have any money at all, right?
Correct.
You got back your card, your food stamp card?
Yeah, they took the EBT card, too.
After a period of, what, 2 or 3 weeks without it?
Yeah, it was about 3 weeks.
And how did you actually get back the specific amount of money you lost?
I don't think so.
What exactly did you get back, and in what form?
I got over $30, but it was all mixed in with the bedding and the plastic wrap. Everything was just kind of helter-skelter.
So have you modified your opinion thinking that the property was taken or not taken? That the money was stolen. At one time you were concerned about that.
You know, I'm still not certain. I no longer know.
Lost some money in the bedding? I mean, that seems kind of a peculiar approach.
I think it was the squeaky wheel effect. I think they were trying to lose my property, and
they just couldn't get rid of it. Kind of like a tar baby.
But they saw I wasn't going away.
Fair enough.
The information that they finally gave me that got my property back, they could have gave me the first time I went to claim my property. For some reason, they waited 3 weeks.
Can I make a real quick announcement?
Thank you. We've been talking with
Michael Knox.
Go ahead. This houseless lady came by. She told me that someone had taken her car after she was in an accident, taken her car to, I think it was Salinas, but that's probably not it. And she said that his name is Hank, and she was thinking he was going to meet her here, but he hasn't come by. He's got it's a blue, light blue Camry wagon with a bunch of stuff on top. So if he comes by, you see that car, tell him that the owner is at the armory shelter, and he should get the car to her through the armory, or taking the car over to Homeless Services Center tomorrow when she gets back. So if you see that car, it's a blue Camry wagon, so a bunch of stuff on top. The guy driving it's named Hank.
And the point of playing this little blip, which I don't know if ever had any consequence, is that this homeless freedom sleepout is actually also a contact point for homeless folks to come, where they don't have to go through a locked security gate, where they don't have to show an ID, where they don't have to be there only at certain hours, although, of course, there only is a freedom sleep once a week, or there has been up to now. It's a place where folks can come at any time during the period they're open and ask questions, give information, and often share food. And that can be really important. And to some extent, it's not without risk. Police drive by. But police have generally kept hands off the protests, at least recently, with the exception of Michael Knox being dragged away into the rain after he dared to, quote, be in a park after dark, that is, at the seat of government, at the city hall, with a protest sign and a blanket. I don't know if he had a sign with him, but he was there as part of the protest. They didn't ticket him for sleeping. I don't know. I think they released him without charges. They woke him up. I think they accused him of being drunk in public. I don't know. He might have been a little intoxicated, but he certainly wasn't causing any trouble. He wasn't a danger to himself or anyone else. He wasn't, and that's the important thing about drunk in public, unable to take care of himself. They had no valid grounds for taking him, other than the fact that he was at City Hall after dark, which was made illegal specifically to criminalize protests back in 2010, when Peace Camp 2010 did a similar protest and successfully won the waiting list exemption. It says if you get on a waiting list, you call 459-6644, 459-6644, and say, I want on the River Street shelter waiting list. You don't have to go actually into the shelter, but if you call back every 3 days, city attorney is supposed to dismiss camping tickets, not these stupid in a park after dark tickets, which people often get because they hide or try to sleep in parks, rather than on the sidewalk in a more vulnerable way, in a more visible way. And they get hassled anyway. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. If you have any comments on this show, give a call to 423-4833 and leave a message. I'll pass on those comments at the next show. Let's hear some more from the Freedom Sleepouts, or specifically Freedom Sleepout number 23. 24 will be coming up on the 22nd of December, in case you want to be helpful. There is a Project Pollinate event happening this Saturday in the Loudon Nelson Center in Santa Cruz, where you can offer assistance for what may be a wet Tuesday night by looking to, they, because I'm only there in a support capacity. I'm sort of a we, but I'm not staying the night, but others are. They want to find some kind of protective gathering, some protective overhang gear that they can use on the sidewalk so they don't get the same treatment Michael Knox got with 12 cops dragging him away, and 6 squad cars in the middle of the night several weeks before. So at Project Pollinate, starting at 11 and running till late afternoon, there's going to be at least, I think, some freedom sleepers or their allies seeking to get, you know, your help, whether it's expertise in setting up some kind of a structure, whether it's food, whether it's video capability or audio capability to come and witness what goes on, even only for a brief period of time, as you'll hear later Toby Nixon, who's leading this effort, talk about.
We're across the street from Dreamcatcher at the Super Silver. I'm hearing some fine music here.
And this is a little break on Pacific Avenue before I return to the Freedom Sleeper event in front of City Hall.
The rhythm of the street, though, or at least part of the street. Well, I'm heel enough as it is. That sounds really good. Otherwise, after dark, within 14 feet of a building, actually after dark isn't relevant. But we have a strange set of laws here in Santa Cruz, near the Pacific and Walnut, and up and down Pacific Avenue. Well, there's no wind, which is a mercy on Pacific Avenue. It can get awfully cold with the wind. And the trees are devoid of leaves. Have the occasional artist here, Dreadeye, a man who's got his paintings with him. Any thoughts this evening, Dreadeye?
No, we need better housing. We need better stuff for the homeless people in this town. But other than that, I guess things been okay.
You have your artwork with you.
Yeah, and I'm going to school, and I'm at top of my class, in my drawing class, with what I just drew. And I'm finishing on Friday with my painting class. Well, I have drawing tomorrow, but I've already finished the class.
Well, I remember when we spoke last, you said you were getting some hassles from some of the bureaucrats at the school, and you'd been excluded from the library or some such. How's that going?
It's going okay. They tried to exclude me from the school for 2 years. They failed their case against me, so I only got one semester out. But I'm going to be going back next fall, and everything's fine. I'm finishing this semester, and both my teachers are on my side. The only thing I did was raise my voice in the financing department a couple times, and because of that, they think I'm some kind of fucking terrorist, and I'm not. I'm not going to have a problem with anybody at that school, and I don't have a problem with anybody at that school.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with?
Randolph Baden Tolley III.
Also known as?
Dreadeye.
Thank you, Dreadeye.
No problem.
Mike Rodkin, you're a man who's been out of politics. What's happening on the, at least in 2016? What do you predict? What do you want to see happen in Santa Cruz? How's that for a vague question?
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We
How about
wish
Hanukkah?
You a
what
Merry
about a Kwanzaa?
Well, Kwanzaa, yes, that too. Hanukkah has passed.
What about Wiccan holidays? Come on, get real.
I can really wish you a...
And this is a brief encounter after I spoke with Dreadeye. I was in front of Forever 21, where he often is with his drawings. You can find him there displaying them, and I think he also is trying to sell them to make ends meet. I think he may be indoors, but he was homeless for a long time, and I first ran into him that I remember, although probably before, at the Occupy protest and encampment of 2011, 4 years ago. But Rodkin and an associate came up and to Rakim is getting on his motorcycle, and so I importuned him, I kind of interrupted him and said, you know, blah, 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 and you hear a little me blah, blah, blahing with Rodkin. Mike Rodkin is a five-time mayor of Santa Cruz, no longer on the council at the moment, who often, almost always, takes positions that are around homeless issues that have been reactionary, although he claims to be a socialist. And he does. He is a community lecturer, or was, up at the university. I don't know if he's still up there, who did allow, in fact, encourage his students to engage in activism downtown, some of whom came to Huff and were helpful for us. He's actually had Huff members arrested. He's had me arrested for trying to attend an ACLU meeting where he's the he was a significant board member who really kind of was the very powerful on the board of the ACLU. He's still powerful on the board of the local American Civil Liberties Union. And he's generally a reactionary force masquerading as a liberal on homeless issues. But he's a nice guy. You know, he's friendly. He's very amiable. And his name and debates I've had with him can be found online at the Huff website. And here I am schmoozing with, one of the main political criminals of our time in Santa Cruz, where if you consider abuses against the homeless, institutional abuses and opposition to meaningful change criminal, which I kind of do in a way. I don't know we should lock people up for this. We should certainly remove them from power. I mean, there's no question about that. And who knows whether he'll be coming back in 2016. Council members have to take a two-year hiatus if they've been in power in one term in office. That's the rule in Santa Cruz, the law. Let's hear some more of this impromptu blah-blah with former Mayor Mike Rodkin.
Very special Wiccan status.
Are you a Wiccan woman?
Well,
what
do
you think?
She's a
Wiccan woman, clearly, but I don't know about the Wiccan thing.
No, I think she is a Wiccan.
So you were on the water affair, and that has turned out, and I know you were at one point a champion of DSL, at one point an opponent of DSL, then a champion of DSL. Where are you now on that whole position?
Well, I just fell all over the map, apparently, but no, I think we came up with a solution that will hopefully meet everyone's needs. We have captured a winter harvest flows from the San Lorenzo, which is, I think, more popular and generally supported. And should that not work after serious, you know, really trying to implement it, we have fallbacks because you have to have water from somewhere. So our fallbacks are recycled water and eventually desal again if we can do it, but unlikely we'll get that far down the path. So I think we came up with a solution that actually will work for the community, which is nice.
You're satisfied with it, or you would have preferred something else?
No, I'm very happy with the outcome. I think it's the best of all the possible outcomes.
Change your mind on your part, or simply dealing with existing realities as they are?
Once the city council decided to back off from DSL and put it on the back shelf and see if there's other options, I committed to looking seriously at other options, and our group came up with one, I think.
How many hours did you spend with that, personally?
I'm going to say it was like a half-time job for a year and a half, about 20 hours a week.
And what was your wage on that?
Zero.
There you are, folks.
They paid us what it was worth. No, I hope you did.
The true feelings underneath, perhaps.
Well, honestly, my hopes for next year, to give you an honest answer, Robert, which your audience will probably appreciate. I really do hope that we come up with some solutions to, we're not going to end homelessness, but that actually provide more alternatives for homeless people to find themselves out of the weather and moving towards some kind of sustainability in their lives. And I think that's a possibility.
Did
and
you
I'm
read Lane's letter on Facebook?
Yeah, I
like it. Your impression on that?
I'm generally very supportive of Don and the approach he's had to this question. I think he's got the right attitude.
Of course, he took the position that you opposed about 20 years ago about ending the sleeping and blanket sections of the camping ordinance. Have you changed your thoughts on that?
No, he came to see the wisdom of my position, I believe. Well,
what was your position?
That the camping ban's an unfortunate stopgap measure as long as other communities don't step up and do their fair share.
But he did say he proposed here in Santa Cruz ending those two provisions. Do you recall that?
He had proposed that, but that's not his current position,
He's
I believe.
He's changed that.
I believe so.
Really?
I don't want to speak to
him. And that was the Facebook letter that I saw. It said abolish those two particular sections.
Yeah, now my view is that at this point we need something more comprehensive than fiddling around with the details of the existing camping ban. And these, I mean, it's not just saying, like, let people sleep where they want. It's not a solution. What we need are more shelter spaces and more programs that actually get people the opportunity to change their lives, find decent employment.
And this is the standard Rodkin line. He hasn't changed it at all. What's interesting about this is his claim that Lane may have been a supporter of ending the camping and the sleeping bans when he wrote his Facebook letter, which you can find online, and also at the Street Spirit website, by the way, if you want to go to it. Terry Messman was enthusiastic enough about some of the things Lane wrote in his letter, particularly that proposal about ending the sleeping and camping ordinances, or sleeping and blanket aspects of the camping ban, that he actually printed it in the November issue of the Street Spirit monthly newspaper, distributed, by the way, at the Sub Rosa Cafe, if you want to get a copy, and online at thestreetspirit.org. But here, Rodkin claims that Lane has changed his position. And it's interesting, I have not been able to get a response from Lane in response to the question I had is, are you planning to put the sleeping ban and the blanket ban, abolition of those two sections, on the next agenda or somewhere down the road at City Hall? Because this is what Phil Posner, who's a freedom sleeper and a strong advocate, has claimed that people should agree and understand is likely to happen and lobby the city council for this kind of stuff and recognize that this is where we should devote all our energies to, in the expectation that Lane and Posner will put this on the city council. I think first it was going to be the first week in January, then it was going to be the second week, then it was going to be the first week in February, or there was some confusion about that. Now it seems Rodkin says that's not going to happen at all. He's changed his mind on that, and I can't hear anything from Lane or Posner about this. And in fact, I'm going to give him a call later in the show to ask him what the current line is. I kind of regard it as a line because I've heard at least Posner make these claims before, that this is going to be on the agenda, that he'll put it on the agenda. He's got Don Lane to agree to put it on the agenda as early as last fall. And that's never come through. So, let's hear some more. And if you want to call in, you may get a recording to which you can leave your own voice message, and I'll play that in a future show. So far, nobody has done that, although actually, if I'm around, I will usually do a direct interview with you, or at least take your information. 423-4833.
It's like the old Mike Rodkin.
Which old? How old?
Well, 96, 2006. I don't know about 86. I wasn't interviewing you back then.
I was busy battling the town for shelters for homeless people.
Indeed, although Immer had some other comments on that city council at that time. The woman who did the hunger fast.
Jane, I believe her name was.
Calamity Jane.
Yes, I didn't agree with her views either. But anyway, I wish you a happy new year and your supporters as well.
And may you and your motorcycle have a pleasant evening.
It's going to be a little nippy on the way home.
It's going to be nippy. Do it. Take care, Mike.
Yeah, that's...
As if Mike, schmoozing with Rodkin wasn't bad enough. Here's two guitarists strumming away on the corner here at Soquel and Pacific. Let's listen in. Down here at the Freedom Sleep Out number 23, is that what we're calling it, Mr. Toby? You are the man who's sort of, I would call at least the medium-sized cheese in this whole thing.
Well, I was calling it the Sleep Safe Santa Cruz, but we, in the General Assembly, we agreed to keep the name Freedom Sleepers.
That was all those Freedom Sleepers, none of whom are here tonight but you?
Yes.
Right. So you are actually... you're also here, yes. But you weren't there at the meeting where they decided to keep the name Freedom Sleepers. Your name, sir?
Theater.
Of course, who else would it be? And you're stretched out on the sidewalk right next to Toby here. And it looks like you two are the first freedom sleepers on, well, you three are the first freedom sleepers actually lying on the sidewalk. There is a group of folks over there, about eight or nine strong. Toby, let me see what's cooking with Brent Adams. I want to see if I can get an interview. I'll be right back to you. Hey, Brent. Any warming center opening tonight?
No, it's forecast to be 38 degrees. We open at 34.
So have you talked to Joel? Because he told us he would open early, even at a higher degree, if you asked him to.
Well, I know you've said that.
You said that to me.
So I have a relationship with Joel, with the warming center, and we can't be open 90 days for the winter. We're open. We're going to be opening probably 15 to 20 days there this winter. 15 at the Quaker Meeting House, 15 at Peace United, because with our algorithm, in years past, we've found that we'll be open somewhere between 45 and 50 days this year.
So Joel will not be involved in this thing?
Or? No, it's the Warming Center. And also, we have to wake people up at 5:30 in the morning when we're at Calvary Episcopal.
So how many volunteers on average is necessary for you to run this, let's say, on
Why
a typical evening?
Why do you have to leave at 5:30?
Because there's an AA meeting at 7.
But if they're alcoholics, they could stay later, right?
Yeah, but we have to wake everybody up and clean up and get it all tight.
How many volunteers does it take, let's say, on an average, do you feel comfortable running the center with?
We run our program with...
I volunteer.
With we have four shifts, and to keep everybody fresh, that's... So in one night, it's easy to say eight people or four people, but if we're open 10 consecutive nights in a row with a rain event or a cold snap, then we have to, you know, really... Well, we have a list of 100 volunteers, and so it's all about keeping the volunteers fresh. As we know, Eugene, Oregon just closed their winter warming center because they burnt through their volunteers immediately, and we don't want to do that here. So I have
how many days or nights were they open, do you know?
I don't know. They had like a 15-day cold snap up there, and the hardest shifts to do are overnight and early morning wake-up cleanup.
Now, I've heard tell of a 10-day rain spate coming up.
Do I have to talk, have this in front of all you guys? I don't want to bother the fuck out of you.
I think they're probably interested.
Yeah.
I've heard tell of a rain beginning, on Sunday and going for 10 days. Is that some sort of mythological? Have you heard anything about
it? I keep hearing that. It's not showing up in the National Weather Service forecast just yet. Okay. And that's a seven-day forecast.
So you have a different temperature when it rains, right?
Yeah. When it rains, it's 36 degrees after a day of rain. And then the other one is any day after the third day of rain, at any temperature, will be open constantly.
Wait a minute. You said 36, but your new target is 38 this year. That's
No. Last year was 32.
Oh, 34, right.
This year's 34, and 36 after a day of rain. That's the one we want to raise with more community support. That's how we're going to open more. We need more community support. We can't just open and just be open. We need it's a whole infrastructure, and we want to be strong, successful, and, so that's how we're doing it. We have
you've been open two nights this winter so far.
Two nights, but I think we should have been open maybe four more.
You didn't have the volunteers, or there wasn't a place to be available at that time?
Right now I'm locked in until the county offers more support. We were before the county today. There's a new county contract that's being talked about with Community Action Board, and they'll probably farm it out to us. And if we get that contract, then we're going to explode and bump it all the way up to 40 degrees, and we'll be open fucking...
We'd be open right now.
Yeah, we'd be open right now.
So, was this actually voted today at the supervisors?
No. First reading. It was on the consent agenda, and it was just voted with about 10 other things all at once with
this
no discussion.
Is this a law, or this is just an appropriation?
It's a conversation that the county now realizes they need to be in the warming center game, and so they're farming it out to CAB.
That only requires one vote, though, so they put the later.
Now they're going to talk about how they're going to construct their... They might shut us out. They might throw us a bone. They might totally contract with us 100%. So I've got a lot of work to do with the city and the county right now, so I have an enormous amount of work to do in the next month.
So CAB is itself interested in running Warming Center and taking it away from you, or doing it instead of you, or?
You know that term that we sometimes hear, poverty pimping?
Yes, I've heard that one before.
I'm starting to see what it looks like.
You don't want to alienate your friends in the social services, Brent.
Very good friends.
Careful.
They do one thing and they do one thing good, and that's middlemanning these sort of things.
For a price, of course.
For a 15% cut.
Sometimes even more.
Yeah, 15%.
Wow.
And they also may... Anyway, so there's a long story there, but I have a lot of work to do. I'm in both chambers, but right now we're locked into our current algorithms. We have a really good relationship with Calvary Episcopal. We need to maintain that. Two people died last night in Monterey. I don't know if you heard.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
In the cold.
Yeah.
Do you know their names?
And being held withheld at this point. They didn't have coats. That's weird. I think they were, but anyway, we're feeling the pain. It's not that we don't want to be open. What we said was we're raising it from 32 to 34, and then we'll do it again with more community support. When we see community support, because we're not a large agency, we're just a few people. When the community is really helping us with this in terms of volunteers and more spaces opening up. In more agencies, then we can do it.
So you had one at the Calvary Episcopal, but no more are planned at the Calvary Episcopal this year.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have probably 10 or 15 more, maybe even 20 there, depending on.
You mentioned two other churches, and I thought that was not the Calvary Episcopal.
Quaker Meeting House and Peace United has given us a firm.
Which is Calvary Episcopal or
Peace United?
Where is Peace United?
That's the old First Congregational Church on High Street.
Okay, so there's actually at least three churches here.
We have three. And city's deliberating about possible depot park. County, if the county steps up and we're able to make some sort of deal, that's going to be a long story. Our long-range plan is to have a center downtown that's a fixed location where we open anytime it hits 40 degrees.
And are there any cities that actually do that other than some huge metropolises that, like Los Angeles, maybe?
Santa Cruz is a problematic town because people are in Eugene. They didn't open until 28 degrees, and so they're way more hardy. We have people here walking around in shorts, and they've been on the beach in the afternoon. And you could easily fall out later, not realizing it's going to freeze, lulled into a false sense of comfort. And so Santa Cruz is that cusp between a beach town and a mountain, town.
Now, what kind of stats do we have about hypothermia in the last 5 years in Santa Cruz?
I have no idea. There are no stats for that.
I mean, there are deaths that the Homeless Service Center records. They have a demo or a memorial coming up on the 22nd.
Dominican doesn't share their numbers.
Dominican is, I'm not going to comment on Dominican.
believe it, Dominican is really underwriting the bill for all of this.
In terms of, it's hospital costs.
So they when somebody calls 911 for and they're feeling like they're freezing and they take an ambulance ride to Dominican, they have to keep them there until that issue and then all other chronic issues are taken care of, and they can't release somebody back to the street legally. They have to release them to shelter.
Interesting. I heard them released illegally frequently, but
you may have heard that. We have a 13-year registered nurse on our board.
Gives you a different story than that?
Yeah, I think I really believe her because she actually pulls long nights. They many people have to be, they monitor them overnight. It's quite expensive for them.
I think with specific individuals have gotten very particular stories. So maybe when she wasn't on, they did that or something.
I would say it's she's the union rep too, so I think she's pretty savvy. But
or she may have an interest in not, giving you the sordid side of the story.
She says it's enormously expensive, and that's why she's...
Oh, I agree with that.
That's why she joined the Warming Center. We have three nurses on our administrative team now from Dominican. So it's like third of this. And so, as you know, the county expects us to beef up our social service professional capacity. We have to improve our volunteer...
Yeah, I remember that. Rather unfortunate city council meeting where they trashed you and then delayed any kind of action until after the winter was over. Very cute. We've been talking with...
I'm Brent Adams of the Warming Center.
Anything you want to end with?
Huh?
Anything else you want to add?
Oh, yeah. We have a Warming Center fundraiser holiday dinner on Thursday. I don't know if this will hit the...
Thursday is when I air this at 6.
Yeah, we'll be there at 7 o'clock.
Well,
but really, we need as many people in the community who don't want to imagine people sleeping out in the cold to support the warming center. We're just local citizens who've stepped up to do this. We're taking a strong stand that no one should have to sleep outside when it's very cold or very wet. And we want to see the community take that stand with us.
Fair enough, Brent. And how can people get in touch with you if they want?
Thank you, Robert. CompassionMan@Hotmail or call 234-9848.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that, of course, was Brent Adams, warming center guy, militantly opposed in the past to protests in the last few years as a way of detracting from his attempt to get respectability with the warming center, and still a critic of people who protest claiming it's futile, it's been tried, it doesn't work, it alienates people, and so forth, which, you know, we certainly disagree on. Lots of interesting information that he gives. And again, I can't verify for its accuracy. It certainly sounds authoritative, and it sounds like it's likely to be true. I do not have time, energy, or interest to really go out and verify it unless I happen to run into the people who will do that. But if anybody wishes to either back up Brent or back him up with criticism, because there are those who are very critical of him in this particular project, and I'm talking about criticism from the left, not from the right. There's some who are saying, "Oh, you were in the Occupy movement, and you went into the building in the bank, the vacant bank, which is still vacant, and tried to establish a community center, violated the law, and pled to a misdemeanor, vandalism," even though there was never any evidence that Brent did any kind of vandalism whatsoever, and was simply trying to help establish a community center. And indeed, this was an attack on all kinds of activists, including Brent, Brent is also a video journalist who's done video journalism on the subject. On the other hand, he tends to get crazy with activists who don't immediately support what he's doing. I think he's gotten better on that, actually. He used to get crazy with them, and now even furious, some would say violent. I don't, you know. I've never seen him strike anybody. He did throw a croissant at Keith McHenry and sits around and did scream at him from a distance that he was, I don't recall the actual terminology. That was 6 months ago when we were arranging at Highway 1 and Highway 9. But, again, it's what we do now. It's what we do in the future that counts. Often I intend on this show to check into the local papers because I often read them and I have some thoughts. Don't usually get them out, but I'm going to try and do that now. There's a newspaper that comes out of Fresno by the Community Alliance. Community Alliance, as I'm looking this over, that's actually the name also of the paper. And Mike Rhodes is an activist there who's often been interviewed. Well, occasionally I've interviewed him in the past. Fresno is the town that actually won, I should say the homeless there, and the attorneys representing them, won a $2.3 million settlement in about 10 years ago. Well, I don't know, 8 years ago. And actually were able to some extent, slow, if not stop, the seizure of homeless property, defend for a time homeless encampments, self-run homeless encampments under the freeways. Rhodes and his associates provided porta-potties, dumpsters, toilet paper, trash pickups, and we're actually trying to support homeless people as they were actually living instead of acting as poverty pimps, which you heard Brent and I kind of referring to, where they were just getting some money in order to allegedly assist a much smaller number of people, which is what social service people often do. That happens particularly at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I'm going to be talking later about Phil Kramer and my experience with him. He's the new director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. He seems to also have a lack of answers so far to the questions I put. And I don't say that necessarily to cast
a premature cloud of suspicion on him, though I think anyone who takes over that job, unfortunately, inherits a mantle of darkness, of suspicion, given their past history and given their current practice of running a prison-like scene out there which denies the most basic services to people who will walk in who are homeless. Unless they want to enter a program, you know, be part of the fundraising activity. It's a little bit like a secular church in a way. Anyway, Ron Martin is a guy who's written a story for Community Alliance, this Fresno, I think it's a monthly or a bi-monthly paper. He's a part of the Homeless Advocates group informing Fresno City Council about options for sheltering our homeless population, small group Bible study at Fresno's First Baptist Church, and indeed in many cities. We have sometimes fundamentalist groups are those who are most intent on defending their own homeless congregations, which, well, at least it's happened in a couple of cities. In Buena Park, where the Reverend Wiley Drake held forth when he wasn't busy attacking gays and supporting Republican wingnuts. He's nonetheless a sweet guy in many ways, defended homeless people parking nearby, homeless people in his church. And, you know, he has to be given credit for that. And I did about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and he actually was dragged into court for doing so. And he was convicted of misdemeanor, I don't know, code violations at his church. I don't recall the exact specifics. I've interviewed him. I may want to look in on him again. I haven't thought of him for a while. In any case, let's hear what Ron Martin of the Community Alliance writes about Eugene. Opportunity Village in Eugene, OVE, in Oregon, is nestled among lumberyards and warehouses at 111 Garfield Street. It houses 30 formerly homeless men and women in small, tall, volunteer-built wooden houses and in shelters of plastic draped over half hoops set on wooden pallets as their floors and foundations. Lisa, the woman doing gate duty in late October, declared that one of the OVE's claims to fame is that it was built for under $100,000. The OVE includes bathrooms in the shelters, a shower house, small kitchen buildings connected by a sheltering tarp, and a canvas yurt for activities of the community, including computer work and group meetings for democratic governance with a small library. It includes the dollar per year that the city of Eugene collects to rent the acre of land for it. After the first year lease, Eugene renewed the lease for 2 more years, yet everything on the property is built to be easily movable on trucks if there is a decision to relocate the OVE. Residents each pay $30 per month to stay to defray some expenses, which includes electrical power. Yet the village is not financially self-sufficient, even though the shelters are not heated or cooled, despite Oregon's cold climate. Residents buy their own food, which they store in the kitchen shelter and its refrigerators, and can cook it on gas camping stoves under the tarp. Water is available at a central faucet with no sink basin below it. The computers used in the yurt indicate that Wi-Fi is another available utility. There are plans to allocate half of each resident's rent payment to be saved in an account for them to use when they depart the village for other circumstances. This makes me a little anxious. Again, looking at homeless people as some sort of disabled, they have to move on in a certain way, unlike, let's say, for example, single-room occupancy hotels where, you know, you crash in a hotel, you pay something cheap, and then you move on. It's just the cheapest kind of shelter you can get, and you do it. This has the pretension of being some kind of, step up, so otherwise we wouldn't allow these dirty, scummy, homeless people to be around here. I suspect there's a bit of that mentality in Eugene, but again, I'm speculating. Lisa described the community as having two factions that have emerged during the governance process, 20% who are eager to leave the community as soon as they can get a job and a paycheck, and in the meantime to earn through a small business activity such as making and selling artworks and baking pastries in a church kitchen, and 80% who are satisfied with life in the OVE, are ready to live out their lives there, and oppose business plans that might interfere with that existence. Another village, Emerald Village, Eugene, is in the planning stage. Planning for the community is overseen by a group of pastors who do its fundraising. Again, we're talking about folks with comfortable homes, probably much further up the income scale, though not necessarily the super rich, of course, who are making the decisions for these poor unfortunates. It's an upside-down situation. The connecting organization to uniting them is called Square One Villages. The organization has two websites, www.opportunityvillageeugene.org and www.squareonevillages.org. And again, I'll repeat those, www.opportunityvillageeugene.org and www.squareonevillages.org. One is spelled out. The basic ideas of the community are set forth in two books, Tent City Urbanism, From Self-Organized Camps to Tiny House Villages by Andrew Heben, 2014, and Pocket Neighborhoods, Creating Small-Scale Community in a Large-Scale World by Ross Chapin and Sarah Sisenka, 2011. The books are not yet in the San Joaquin Valley Libraries, but are available through Amazon. I picked up one of them at one of Brent's events and haven't read it yet. And that, again, is in the Community Alliance newspaper, which you can get, I think it may be online. That's the December, www.fresnoalliance.com, if you'd like to check out their general slant and their articles. They often have articles. A lot of stuff is about foreign affairs, Islamophobia. There's some poetry in there. It's a bit like the Street Spirit newspaper that I distribute down here, and that you can find online at thestreetspirit.org. It's a little bit more like a community lefty newspaper. We used to have some of those in the 80s and the 70s. There aren't such papers anymore. There was one very briefly called The Alarm around the turn of the millennium. And you can actually, you can find The Alarm online and read far too much international stuff in my view, but some local stuff, which is always reassuring to me. Let's get back to Freedom Sleep 23, which was held 2 days ago by homeless people almost entirely, in fact, with a couple of students involved. Hats off to Amethyst and Pond, two students from UCSC who came down, and I think some more. They may have had some friends with them. Let's hear and let's get inspired, because the Freedom Sleepers will be returning for Freedom Sleep 24 on the 22nd, and you can learn more about that by contacting Toby Nixon. Toby Nixon can be found at, give him a call at 408-582-4152. Again, Toby Nixon, 408-582-4152. And I believe you can also find him online. I'll be giving you his number. I think if you look on Facebook for him, you'll find that too. And let's see where we're at here. Continuing.
You got to put that at the beginning of the show. It's a good day. So what's the scene out here?
Fine,
Germany? So we're talking with...
Yeah, Polly.
And you say you've been traveling, Polly, in Europe?
Yeah, I have been like 3 years.
Rough sleeping? Or?
I'm French. No. Just working. I'm with friends. My girlfriend and so. But then I come over here and I see all these people hassle and push from one place to another. And I wonder, like, what happened to the America I grew up with? I was born here in the States. My parents took me back to Europe when I was 10. So I spent my teens abroad. But when I was a little kid, the America of Charlie Brown, baseball and all these things. And I came back to do college later on. And then I did the military too.
What years were you a child?
In the 70s. Uh-huh. And America still was that. But of course, something happened in my teens that it was Reagan came to America.
That's right, Reagan.
And a bunch of other things happened, and I really missed the high school years, and I missed those 80s years that I really don't know what happened, that they switched everything off. And it's been like, trickling down all the way in the last 3 decades. And I really can't recognize who are these people, how they are running this country, like if this is Nazi Germany.
Yeah, yeah, the homeless are the new Jew.
Yeah, like, and it is a chain, because there is homeless Jews, and those guys, many of them are Jews. Why these people are pushing these agendas? Even Reagan didn't have this idea of America, because he grew up in the 30s, no? He didn't want to see hobos all over the country, but they create another...
He cut all the housing funding, so what do you expect?
He create another 30s, like the crisis that came in 2008. Were these people nostalgic of the 30s, like the Great Depression?
They made a lot of money, everyone else got poor.
Yeah.
Are you outside yourself? Or?
No, I'm staying in the Hotel Rose, but you know, I can't see. This could happen to me or to anyone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to get worse.
I can't believe it. I don't know where they are heading or like. And somebody told me that they're making concentration camps for homeless.
FEMA.
Or for people that they want to move their of their houses. Like, they didn't got enough with the people they kicked out of their own homes in 2008. They want to bring this another round of squeezing. What is this? Is like that game where you put like 15 chairs and there is 17 people. But eventually, one is going to get out. No, they put 10 chairs out. So it's like a bunch of people are going to be able to sit because they just...
And we've been listening to the thoughts of...
Oh, Polly, yeah.
Thanks, Polly. Should be on Free Radio on Thursday.
I can't believe this. I really don't know. I can't understand it. I don't know. I mean, in which other country...
So now we're talking with Toby Nixon. Toby, you came all the way from San Jose to park your butt on the cold sidewalk.
Yes, absolutely.
Why is that? I see a squad car is going back and forth. Have you arranged with the police for protection?
Yes, I have arranged for the police. No, of course I haven't. They're trying to intimidate us off the sidewalk.
So you yourself are the lone freedom sleeper here, except, of course, for the infamous Sea Otter and a few other folks. But you're the only one who's been struggling to attend these silly meetings that we've been having. And we continue to have, I guess we're going to have another meeting next, what is it, next Tuesday at the Red Church or some such thing?
Yes,
What there was a meeting tonight of the Freedom Sleepers. What came out of that meeting on the sidewalk a few hours ago?
Well, we decided that we were going to continue this. We were going to keep the name Freedom Sleepers. And, yeah. Yeah, that's what we decided. Basically, we were going to we're trying to find another avenue to express, to pressure the city council and the mayor to end the sleeping ban or give us a safe place to sleep, period.
Indeed. Have you gotten any reports from folks about the extent of sleeping tickets in the last week in the city?
No, I haven't gotten anybody. Nobody's come up to me and told me.
Well, let me know if you do get reports. I will be contacting you later tonight, perhaps waking you up as you have occasionally awoken me at different time.
But yeah, I get up. I go to bed early and get up early, and you go to bed late and get up late.
It's a difficult situation.
Yes.
Do you mind if I call you later tonight?
No, go ahead. Yeah, I may not answer. But you can call me.
Do you want to put out your number for folks in case they want to reach you to get more information about the Freedom Sleep?
Yeah, but I don't have that number, Bammer.
I will try to give it later in the show because I actually did post it myself on Santa Cruz Indie Media when I put up a thingy which you may have seen, a little notice.
And again, Toby Nixon's number is 408-582-4152. 408-582-4152.
They can call me. We need donations.
Donations of?
Hot chocolate. No, blankets especially. It's going to be really cold tonight.
I'll be indoors while you're outdoors, so best of luck to you here.
Toby.
Thank you, Toby. Any street reports?
I'm
cool. So, we're talking with
Jonathan Pinto Chavez.
And Jonathan, you are bundled up for the night here. You've got your backpack with you, and your face is half covered with a kind of a warm cloth, expecting a cold night.
Yes, sir.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
23 years.
And how long have you been outside?
20 years.
Were you 3 years old when you started outside?
No, well, I've been out here 23 years, and...
20 have been on the street.
Look. We go from 15, I got drunk, and I told my dad he was an ass.
That was a mistake. Maybe not.
In Spanish. I don't want to say because it's a bad word.
That's a bad word. But let me ask you this. Any tickets or hassles in Santa Cruz recently?
Yeah, the cost.
What happened?
Always harassed me and my cousin. Pineapple.
Hey, Pineapple, hello.
Yeah, I got arrested for a 14-year-old warrant.
And what was the warrant for what crime?
Nothing.
Indeed. Well, what do they say was the crime?
Contributing to a minor.
Who cares? Anyway, so what happened then in this situation?
Maragonda. No, that he goes, you cite, dude, just plead guilty and all that. And it's like Officer Winston.
Yes, I know Officer
Winston. I'm full of a dick.
Officer Winston. He was just like, well, I hate you, and all that. It was like, he knew me when I was a little kid, and all that, dude. Like,
he doesn't hate you, he just has a crush on you, bro.
So is there an affair between you and Officer Winston? Is that
what the fuck?
See,
apparently.
Right, so in any case, you're sleeping out tonight. It's a cold night. You're generally outside at night, both of you guys?
Yes, sir.
Any tickets for sleeping outside?
Not lately.
Is that a change in the police department policy, do you think?
I don't know. Tell you the truth, I'm not political or nothing, but I think the cops are letting us go, a little bit. But when the end of the month, they have to get their money, right? And they give us tickets. So they start being fucking assholes.
But can you afford? You guys can't afford to pay the tickets.
No, we're if I could, man, I would have a house. But no,
I hear you. And we've been talking with
Jonathan Pensor Chavez
and with
Lucas Celestino Barón.
Thank you, guys. It should be on.
This is another one of those bandwagon songs. See, we discovered that like people like Bruce Springsteen and John Cougar Mellencamp and everybody, they were doing all these songs about Middle America. And we'd actually been through Middle America in a motorhome, which is the only way to go. And discovered that they didn't know what they were singing about. We figured they flew their big corporate jets in, landed, did a concert, and left. But anyway, they were singing all these songs, and since they'd been signed to a label, we thought we'd do it, which is what the whole bandwagon motif is about. So I thought I'd write a song about Middle America. This is a song about Middle America. It's a love song. It's called Me and Mrs. Middle America.
Middle America.
American husbands and wives. What's the agenda for Megan Morrison? The passionate catches and passive restrictive. It's so delicious to me that the maiden dismisses her worries and hires her complaints. I like the melody, the family Christmas, when family dishes tell us for the night. And this will persist in resisting their usual devices. We go to the mall, we go to the movies, we shine up the shoes on Saturday night. We go to the club, we go to the alleys, we turn off the news, we turn on the phone. This is Middle America, snapping our towels and flapping our thighs. And this is Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. Me and my honey, we're watching our money, we're losing gin rummy and gaining some weight. Some witness it's funny how me and my honey are equally chummy with people we hate. Me and the missus, we both know our places. If this one's so kissing and wishes come true, we never suspicious. Not me and the missus, we both know that this is the best we can do. We go to the job, we go to the meetings, we say that we'll vote, but never quite will. We stay on the phone, we fight in the meetings, we send in a note when somebody needs help. Travelers with plenty of slides. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Mother's Day doilies and Father's Day ties. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives.
And that was Me and Mrs. Medical and Mrs. Middle America. Uncle Banzai, a group I like. I think that was from the early 90s or late 80s. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. The name of this show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. If you want to leave a message for anything that you've heard on the show, got a correction, got an addition, give a call to 423-4833, area code 831-423-4833. And now we have a further update from Toby Nixon, the morning after the Freedom Sleepout.
Don't go around. Or what's that?
I'm calling Amethyst over.
Oh, okay, good. So we're on the line with Toby Nixon and Amethyst at the Freedom Sleepout 23, where the icicles are rife. How did you guys do? Did you break yourself out from the ice-packed sleeping bags?
Yeah, we all. How did we survive?
You did survive. Well, that's
we,
not.
Someone came over and put a tarp over us. Very generous.
I did.
Oh, Toby! Toby was. Oh, Robert, you were the reason.
I'm the one. I'm the savior in my warm bed. I might add.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that deeply.
Sure. Now, what happened there on the sidewalk? How many, was it three or four people who slept overnight?
Actually, there are quite a lot of people here right now. Maybe one, two, three, four.
There's probably a couple of people who watered up food.
There's maybe 14 to 15 people here right now, but
right.
Last night there were probably like six or seven of us.
Uh-huh. And how about the food situation? Did anyone donate? I know the usual food that they supplied by others did not. Did it come through? What happened?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Pat Colby brought some fried rice and some vegetarian stuff for Marity. Mm-hmm. And then they came out with coffee and soup and stuff, and they brought some oatmeal this morning, Amethyst group, with hot water with, you know, tea and a V8 splash. It was really quite a success.
Wow. And are you intending to repeat this ordeal next Tuesday for Freedom Sweep 24 or whatever you're calling yourselves?
Yes, if it even if it dips down to the 20s, I will be here.
I see. I hope you you have, of course, going to light a small bonfire on City Hall grounds, perhaps.
No. I won't turn into a popsicle. Some of these other people might turn into a popsicle, though. We have cold chocolate.
Now, what about Amethyst? Is she and her gang of ne'er-do-wells planning to come as well?
Amethyst, are you coming back next week? You'll be out of town.
So it will be you versus the three security guards next week?
Yes. Mm. I don't like to think about it like that. They are getting overtime, and they are here for the overtime, and they have not made any trouble that I can see.
Have you had much conversation with them about, you know, whether they are willing to testify the area has been kept clean and tidy by the homeless freedom sleeper activists?
Well, they didn't give us any trouble at all. But I do normally talk to Chase, and Chase would complain if there was some sort of complaint. He would take it up with me, and he hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Although we're keeping a close eye on the trash and keeping it policed, so there shouldn't be that much of a BS. We haven't entered, we haven't gone past bricks at all, so we have kept kind of confined. Most people did stay off landscaping at the library.
And explain what that means for those who don't know who are listening.
Well, there's landscaping around the library that obviously costs money to put in, and if people sleep on that landscaping, the library has to pay for that to be taken care of. So we don't want them to incur any extra expense. So we've tried to discourage people from laying directly on the landscaping at the library.
And yet you support them violating the law by sleeping on the library grounds, the concrete part of it, after 9:30. And I would even imagine lying on the city council bricks after 10 o'clock. How can you endorse such criminal behavior?
Well, obviously there's not enough space at the shelter for people to go if there are... Indeed, I mean, some of these people didn't sleep over here with us, but they all have slept outside last night. So I think this is a testament that those systems are not functioning as well, as perfectly as they let on. So, you know, something needs to be done.
So in the past, there's been a kind of a congregation of folks under the eaves of the nearby Civic Auditorium and also the Greek Orthodox Church, which is kitty corner from the protest, not to mention the library, which you just mentioned across the street. Were you able to see if there were such groups of people last night?
Yes, I did see, and there were not. They were sleeping in accordance with either our wishes or out of visibility, and that means that they could not have slept at the Greek Orthodox Church or the Civic Auditorium. We're trying to keep people from going to those areas, unless there's like rain or something, trying to keep people from going over there and damaging the property.
So there is a spat of rain, I've heard, although I haven't examined the weather reports, planned for the next week, starting on Sunday or something. Will you be bringing your rubber boots?
Yes, certainly, if that is the case. Now is a great time to plan for that. If it's in, obviously, if it's going to be a few days, we probably should prepare for that.
Mm-hmm.
We should try to get Brian, or what is his name, Brent Adams, Yes, to bring us one of those tents with the heater in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should put that on the bricks.
Well, I'm sure Brent would be eager to support a protest in that way. Actually, I'm being sarcastic. Brent has been a long-term opponent of protest as an ineffectual and counterproductive solution, which simply interferes with his Sanctuary Village and Warming Program attempts to get City Council to recognize the importance of, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm just saying that being that there are cold people that are being left out in the cold, he's calling himself the warming center. Obviously, people are going to come over here. It might seem kind of obvious that he would do that and come over to the dark side. I mean, it just so happens to be a protest. All these people need warmth at night, especially on these cold and going to be wet nights.
Indeed. And then we had actually a somewhat lengthy conversation with Brent Adams, probably played at the same time in the same show, at least, as I'm going to play your account here. Anything with respect to police that happened last night? Did any of the officers stop and offer you a warm mug of cocoa, as I know you're often on the lookout for?
Yeah, they offered Amnesis some hot hands pocket warmers last night. And told us to stay warm. That was the brutal encounter with the police last night.
And which officers were engaged in this kind of questionable behavior?
I don't know. Amethyst, do you know what officers came last night and offered you the hand warmers? C. Jones. It was a woman, right? It was a male officer named C. Jones.
Well, did she chide this officer and tell him that this was wasting taxpayer money on enabling homeless people and making it a more welcoming place for drug addicts, bums, and mentally ill individuals?
Well, it is cheaper for them to come out here and bring hand warmers than to lock us up. Well, I just want to note that.
Well, remember, if you can eliminate the fingers through frostbite, there's no need of hand warmers.
I'm sorry you feel that way.
I'm just trying to express the dominant paradigm here.
Yeah.
So, Toby, any other thoughts before I continue chugging away at the legendary Huff agenda?
Just that we can tolerate more people here, and I always encourage people to come out, even if they will only stay for an hour. To come out and support us, listen to the demands of the people and try to help them wherever they can. I mean, you may have some leftovers in your refrigerator, you may have an extra blanket, you may have, you know, whatever. You don't know. You don't know how you can help them until you ask.
So what is a contact point where people can reach you for the next week? I guess you'll be coming back, Tuesday evening, next Tuesday the 22nd, right?
Yeah, Facebook, and then, of course, they can get my number from you.
As your number, if I understand it properly, and for your own information, since I know you seem to, like myself, have forgotten these things, is 408-582-4152. That's 408-582-4152. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that is
correct. Okay, well, I'll see you at the Huff meeting, and make sure you drag Amethyst with you if you can. We need some color at the meeting here.
If at all possible.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
And Huff meets every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, at 11 o'clock in the morning. Runs till around 1, sometimes a bit later. If you don't want to get to meetings because you think they're a waste of time or you feel a little too blown away by my endless monopolizing the chair of the meeting, you can call 423-4833 and offer to have your skills used somewhere else, or offer whatever help you can, or get more information. You can also go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F, Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, huffsantacruz.org. And, of course, you're still tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And I'm still Robert, so there.
Well, on the line with me is Dennis Epler, who's a long-time local activist. Are you long-time, Dennis, or relatively?
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I only really got involved with the Occupy movement. I was involved in some actions and activities before that, but now it's only the last 6 or 7 years.
Well, I know that you and I just had a conversation on the phone. You're also academically involved with ongoing research and writing around China, Iran, international politics, and such.
Yeah, it's sort of a vocation of mine.
And you also teach at Cabrillo a course in
Europe. Yeah, I'm an evolutionary biologist and human paleontologist, otherwise known as a paleoanthropologist, and I teach biological anthropology at Cabrillo College.
I got you. Which qualifies you, of course, to be a political scientist.
Well, not really. I mean, they're two separate, you know, interests of mine. I did spend a lot of time in China in the 1980s and 1990s. I do speak Chinese and have a Chinese family, and that my wife was from Beijing, and, you know, we had two kids, and we're no longer, you know, together, but nonetheless, you know, it was a long-term relationship, and I have an intimate knowledge of things Chinese.
Right. Well, I know you've also been following, as a lefty, things in Venezuela, the recent election, and other international events that kind of I occasionally dip into on this show. But, of course, my main interest and what I mainly spend time on is local activism, and such as the ongoing protests at City Hall. I'm particularly interested when people actually get out of their houses, out of their cars, off their asses, and start doing something in Santa Cruz rather than chattering about it, organizing around it, but doing nothing actually specific. I criticized you and SCORE, for example, Santa Cruz Coalition for Community, to fight racism, which means to get more grants, study the problem some more, but never actually go to the police station with a bunch of people and say, what the fuck are you doing with this kind of racist crap?
There's no question that different organizations have different agendas and approaches.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily criticize one organization versus another because of strategic plan that they might have to address problems.
Yeah.
I would say SCORE is definitely taking a is more interested in addressing the issues with
stakeholders
or gatekeepers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not really, you know, involved in ongoing,
They certainly aren't involved, except they aren't involved, except they're involved in deluding the community into believing they would be involved. I've talked to you about this before. I spent literally years with you trying to get you to unearth through Simba Kenyatta and others the many specific complaints against the sheriffs and other law enforcement agencies.
I'm very keen on.
My point is not that to criticize SCORE unduly, but to let people know who are supporting these organizations if they want to have some action, they often have to take it themselves. This is true, for example, around issues like the sleeping ban and other things. It's just, there are a lot of well-meaning liberals who, ain't it a shame, and, let's get together and let's give the police some more training in racial sensitivity. But when it comes to, let's say, actually exposing the stats of officers who are specifically ticketing people at 4 to 5 times the rate of, for African-Americans that they're doing others, as Officer Bradley Barnett was doing downtown, they're strangely absent. They're strangely silent. They're more interested in pandering to people in political power. So that is a concern of mine. But I'm going to let you respond to that, and let's see what you have to say. We have a little problem on the speakerphone here because we're talking at the same time, And there's a real problem because, you know, you the audience can't hear you. But let's give you a chance to talk about that. Okay. Dennis, you have to start again. I'm sorry. Can you repeat what you were saying?
Oh, okay. I said that, you know, SCORE is not the organization that, you know, addresses issues in that fashion, even though I
you can say that again.
It needs to be one. It's not SCORE. SCORE has a different approach. Not to say that I disagree with what they're doing. It's just that it's different than what you're talking about. And I also involved in other groups that are much more proactive and much more engaged in, you know, organizing people to resist in the streets.
Anything in anything actually in Santa Cruz? Because I mean, I'd be very pleased to hear about such groups.
Well, of course, I mean, you're familiar with Project Pollinate, and you know, we had you know, when there was that spate of killings, you know, killings, you know, in New York and Ferguson and elsewhere, and we single-handedly organized a march downtown of 400 some odd people, and we converged on the resource center for nonviolence, and we had workshops and speak outs around that issue.
Yeah, I actually do remember that, and I remember how individuals tried to clear people away from the streets and get them off the streets into the little workshops which were organizing for that particular organization. And I also remember that there was absolutely nothing local in terms of the actual police department around that issue, and nothing about Santa Cruz's behavior. So while it's all very well to tail on Black Lives Matter movement, I'm more concerned about Santa Cruz, and that's actually the reason I'm calling you. And let me hear what you have to say about that. Go ahead.
Oh, you want me to continue?
Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about SCORE because you and I have, you know, different opinions on that. I didn't bring up SCORE as a specific, you know, thing I wanted to go into at length or to hear a long apologia for. I brought up SCORE because I'm concerned about these issues generally and what organizations are actually confronting these issues locally, Dennis, not, okay.
Well, let me get a word in edgewise.
Okay, well, talk about locally. I guess, you know, I mean, I only...
You're speaking about Project Pollinate and how we organized a mass march of 400 people in Santa Cruz around these
said that,
issues,
Dennis.
Both nationally and locally. And then, you know, you bring up the fact that there were a handful of people who basically autonomously wanted to block the ocean, street.
As happened in numerous other cities, yes.
There were members of the march who did not think that was an appropriate, action at that time.
All right. Dennis, I mentioned that. Wait a minute. Dennis, I mentioned that because, you know, it's not so much that one thing. The question is, what came out of all that? Have we had any broader criticisms or actions around police department abuses, respective with racial minorities and poor people, you know, and, you know, people of different, gender preference or identification and in Santa Cruz, other than, you know, fundraising and, you know, at that. But again, you see, that's not really my main topic. I mean, my main topic is you are a guy who I think wants to, in your own way, push the envelope. I think you want to move beyond mere academic criticism. You're concerned to see some real change in Santa Cruz. That's why I'm calling you up, you know, because I think you're involved in that way.
So let me respond to the questions you ask without, you know, interruption. That would be great.
What questions do you feel I'd ask? Because I haven't really asked you any questions.
No, you brought up this whole issue about SCORE.
But I'm not asking any questions.
You brought up the whole issue about there's nobody in town who is reacting to these issues of, you know, indiscriminate police violence, and I responded to that.
In Santa Cruz, Dennis, I'm sorry, I can hear a lot of talk about what's happening in Ferguson and San Francisco and Oakland. I'm talking about what's happening in Santa Cruz.
That was the impetus for you know, the mass mobilization because it was so blatant. And during that march, there were many people who spoke about how the same thing, you know, maybe not in terms of actual murders, but, you know, in Salinas that has occurred with, you know, our Latino brothers. But, you know, yeah, we talked about, there were many people.
Yeah, talk is one thing, Dennis. We talk about it forever.
And people were speaking about the local situation. It was bringing in the local situation of the context.
I'm not talking about it, Dennis. I'm talking about doing something about it, not just talking about it.
If you let me continue, I would agree with you that much, much, much more has to be done in that regard.
How about something has to be done? Not much, much more.
Come together and, forge an organization, which I don't think, actually exists, today in Santa Cruz, that is much more, focused on those sorts of issues and, organizing the community to respond. I know, there's lots of struggles that developed spontaneously because of particular set of circumstances. You know, there's the whole issue around the Bearcat. There's the issue still continuing around the Beach Flats Garden. There's any number of such issues around, the sleeping ban, around, the police profiling, minorities. I mean, there's a host of issues, and there are, groups that sort of emerge, de facto groups that emerge in response to a particular situation. Now, the group I'm most active with now, Project Colony, the whole objective is to try to bring these different groups together so that we can maybe mobilize a broader coalition of forces. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be, attempts to create, an ongoing organization that can respond to the issues that you're speaking of. I would love to see that happen.
Sounds good. I know that Project Pollinate is actually, Project Pollinate actually has an event coming up on Saturday. You want to talk about that?
We've been having these quarterly gatherings, around the equinox and solstice. The curse seasonally, of course. So we have the winter solstice gathering, which will be Saturday, beginning at around 11 o'clock at the Loudon Nelson Center. And the whole idea is to bring the community together so that people can exchange their ideas and experiences. So there'll be a lot of local groups who will be tabling, about the issues they're concerned with. There'll be performers, trying to integrate culture and activism galvanize the younger people to become more involved and socially conscious. So we have a number of musical performances. We have, other people presenting workshops about the issues they're concerned with. We also offer a free vegan, a meal, which, I cook myself, to feed. We've had upwards of 200 or 300 people attending our previous gatherings, and, so that's, that's something I'm involved with, and it's been successful, and we hope to see it become, we've done it four times now, this year for the, the various seats.
That sounds great, Dennis. And I'm thinking, this is a free event, right? People can just come in at 11 o'clock. That's on the 19th, I guess, right?
It is free. Everything is for the community. And the idea is just to try to, build a sense of community and to, to show that, many groups, that sort of act, on their own, independent of each other, share a common perspective, anti-corporatist, some of them are, specifically anti-capitalist, but they all share a similar perspective that, but they don't necessarily come together and work as a unit, that's all we're trying to forge.
What do you hear happen?
And actually, that's about half of the interview with Dennis Ettler. Did it earlier this morning, Thursday morning. But I think I need to be moving on because we're reaching the end of the show. Maybe back on Sunday with the rest of that interview, though Dennis gave some interesting background on the Beach Flats Community Garden, the struggle with the Seaside Company and the city,
he didn't have a lot of current information about what the current status is and whether they're actually going to, you know, actively fight other than simply write the occasional cranky letter to the, well, angry letter to the Sentinel. And, you know, I hear rumors of this and that, but I don't know what's going on with that. Also, I had a conversation with Keith McHenry, which I don't think I have time to play. He went to court on Wednesday morning in order to get the police records around the new charges he's facing for essentially calling assistant to the assistant manager, Scott Collins, a, quote, fucking pussy, after Collins tried to run away from him or get away from him when he was asking Collins to verify with his own eyes that there was no mess at City Hall, in spite of what other staff members and the mayor had been pushing as a narrative that justified increased police action, increased first alarm thuggery, increased, at the time, Klieg lights and no parking jackets and things of that sort. And he's charged with, I guess, disturbing the peace. I'll be playing his interview at a later point, I think on Sunday. And he also talks about his what is going to be taking up his time in the next few months. He's trying to finish a book, and he also is encouraging people to support the local Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. We'll be hearing some more of that, as I think, on Sunday at the 9:30 show. That's when that comes up. What we have going on now, I should say, the last few minutes of the show, I kind of want to run through a few things. There's no, of course, city council meeting coming up until second week in January. I tried to get some answers from Homeless Lack of Services Center's interim executive director, Phil Kramer, previously frontman for the 180-180-220. I was going to say scam, but let's at least say token project, shuffle the deck chairs around on the sinking ship kind of project. I tried to find out, you know, answers to such questions as, does the Homeless Lack of Services Center still support making all parking nearby banned to everybody 24 hours a day unless you have a permit, which is what the Public Works pushed through in spite of my opposition, and hasn't yet, you know, even though I pushed it through, there's no signs appearing and vehicles continue to park on Fern, Coral, and Limekiln streets. Is he in favor of having a police officer be able to call the Homeless Lack of Service Center before they issue a ticket and say, do you have a space available tonight, right now? Because here's a person outside who needs one. He wasn't able to answer that. Or let's put it this way. I hope him to get clearer answers to that question. I asked him a number of questions right before we did our forum, or I should say the Freedom Sleepers did their forum. And I'm a Freedom Sleeper myself, have been there on different occasions. Certainly slept at least half the night on almost all the Freedom Sleepouts, except for the last one, this one, this last one on the 20, on the 15th, Freedom Sleeper 22, Freedom Sleep 22. So there are questions that the director he's actually emailed me back saying, what are your questions? And so I'm hoping to put that together. I'm also trying to put together a demurrer to charges against me that I was in the park after dark, which means to say at City Hall with a protest sign on one of the pathways through City Hall, where you're supposed to be able to be in spite of this crazy law, which says you anywhere that the parks director says is closed is suddenly closed, even if it's the city government, even if you're being there with a First Amendment activity. It's never been challenged in that way, and I'm hoping that this can be done. Steve Plaich has offered to try to help me with this. Steve's a very busy man. It's kind of hard to get him to get this together, and I'm also occupied with the recent medical problems that are, you know, we'll see how they go. I have two charges coming up in January, a trial in Department 1 with Judge Burdick and a trial in Department 2 with Judge Deneen Guy, both of whom are part of the same racket, you know, running people through the mill, finding them guilty and moving on to the next case. They are, you might even say, if you want to be generous, they simply want to follow the law. Of course, the laws are designed to criminalize the poor, except unless the police officers say it's okay for them to be there.